This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. Today, joining us on the program, we have Dr. Jackie Heller, an MD, a psychoanalyst. She is a board certified in psychiatry and neurology. Her professional experience as a practicing clinician has allowed her extensive insight into the vast range of human experiences. Her new book is Yesterday Never Sleeps, delves into her personal experience with family trauma and helping others work through their own. And Dr. Heller, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Certainly nice to have you out, and really do appreciate your time. So for starters, what does Yesterday Never Sleeps mean? That's certainly an interesting title to kick things off here today.
Well, Yesterday Never Sleeps means that we are driven in large measure by our unconscious mind, which is responsible for, believe it or not, about 95% of what we think and what we do. Our actions and our behaviors and our thoughts are not well known to us, even though we think we do know who we are. Much of what we do and think and perceive is automatic. And so I think my goal is to help us develop a little more awareness of our unconscious mind, because we tend to fear going into plumb the depths of our psyche, and not doing so can really leave us in the dark and can create a lot of trouble in the world, because we have hair trigger reactions and people respond to hurts and slights and injuries without thinking, and can't even identify their emotions. So my goal is to help people get closer to themselves and discover negative patterns that are repetitive that they have no understanding of. Basically ever present. Not to say that we should live in the past, but the past does affect us. And if we focus on living in the moment and the things that come up for us emotionally, meaning what we feel physically, the small changes day to day, moment to moment, that actually tap into hidden hurts and hidden slights, the past will come to us. We don't need to go look for it. If it's important and something happened that's buried and repressed, it will remind us if we focus on the present day.
Certainly some great points made to kick things off here today, and it really does make a whole lot of sense as well. Now, how and why is introspection important? Get into that a little bit, if you would.
Well, introspection is basically the tool to allow for self-reflection. And self-reflection is important because you get to know yourself. And it's important. Attachment theory teaches us, this is scientifically proven, that if you introspect and you reflect, you can create a cogent self-narrative. And having a life story, I mean, we all tell stories. We tell stories to live, Joan Didion said. We tell stories because we need to have a sense of self. And having a personal life, a self-life narrative, including the good, the bad, and the ugly, that's a detailed narrative of your life that includes that's well bodied, that's dimensional, that's layered, that includes everything that's cogent and something you can repeat that's repetitive, is very important for having a sense of autonomy, for having independence, for becoming grounded, and for having healthy attachments. There was a lot of research done on this, including Robin Fivish and Duke out of Emory University. They studied, for example, children that survived the cataclysmic Katrina hurricane, natural disaster. And those adolescents that were connected to their history, that knew their story, that knew where their grandparents were from and where they lived and had a sense of rootedness in their history, fared better. They were more autonomous. They were more independent. They did better academically, socially, across the board. And this is kind of well known. So self-reflection is important to know yourself and to create your life story, which is not just a story. It's the story that's annotated, that's thought about. So if you know your feelings and you can identify your emotions, you can then think about them and have a new perspective and broaden your horizons and your decisions about how to proceed, how you can behave, if you have a richer, fuller complement of possibilities and options.
Now, here's an interesting question for you, per your expertise. Was Freud right about the unconscious mind?
Yes, Freud was very right about the unconscious mind. I mean, the unconscious mind is a vast place. It's composed of neural networks, many of them. big ones. One is called the default mode network, which basically is responsible for background activity and interconnectivity. It's associated with depression and with kind of inactivity, but it really is, they're big neural networks that connect. And the process of self-reflection allows the brain, the areas of the brain that are responsible for higher order functioning, they flourish and they explode in neural network. Neural bundles increase dramatically from the prefrontal orbital cortex throughout the cortex. And this is the higher order cognitive functions that relate to reasoning, rationale, reality testing, sequencing, forecasting, decision-making, judgment, all the things that we all want that make us smart and make us capable. And so self-reflection and making these connections with mindful introspection is actually really good for the brain. And there are a lot of ways to do this, to achieve this, but to my way of thinking, it's the best habit a human being can form, because the more self-reflective you are, the more likely you are to become compassionate, sympathetic, understanding. Because if you know yourself and you love yourself and you understand yourself, you're much less likely to finger point. If we look inward, we're less likely to point outward and blame and scapegoat. And that's really what I'm trying to work on with my book. And that's what I focus on. So yesterday never sleeps means the unconscious is ever present. The unconscious is past, present, and probably the future. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's something we need to know well and not be afraid of. And it can explain a lot of feeling and deep emotion, intense raw emotion that we don't negotiate well. And that allows people to feel fearful, anxious, depressed, discouraged, and not know why. It's a not knowing why that is answered by some of this introspection.
Really do appreciate the insight and information shared here today. Per your expertise, certainly has folks thinking and analyzing the conversation and the information shared so far. We're speaking with Dr. Jackie Heller, an MD, a psychoanalyst and board certified in psychiatry and neurology. Her professional experience as a practicing clinician has allowed her extensive insight into the vast range of human experiences. Her new book is Yesterday Never Sleeps, and she's joined us here today on eHealth Radio's Mental Health Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, continuing on, why is having a self-narrative important?
Well, you know, as Aristotle said, you know, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. And we don't know ourselves as well as we think we should. And we are masters at self-deception. And it's understandable, and there's a good reason for it. We humans are geared and built to steer clear of pain. I mean, we are, human nature is such that we categorize and compartmentalize and disavow emotions, memories, and experiences and parts of ourselves that we don't like or can't bear. So in neglecting all of our hidden hurts, we tend to act out in ways that are dysfunctional and draining to ourselves and others. We have cognitive distortions. We have perceptual observations that may not be correct. We may think we're telling the truth, but we're not, because we're lying to ourselves. So the trick is to learn how to make the unconscious conscious. Otherwise, in spite of ourselves, we can repeat history. So, you know, it's important to look inwards to contact our unconscious. And, you know, for ordinarily for a child that's growing up in a good enough home with good enough parents, which just means consistent, clear-cut nurturing and caretaking, it's nothing terribly unusual, then we can look into ourselves and have much more meaningful connections with others, because we spend too much time wagging our finger at others. And if there was more self-reflection, then there would be less hate in the world, and we would look at ourselves and know what makes us tick and what ticks us off, and not immediately go outward and externalize blame and scapegoat others.
Yeah, good stuff right there. Thanks for that. Now, what is intriguing and necessary about connecting to family and ancestors? What's your thought on that?
Well, what's intriguing about that is that that's part of a life narrative. I mean, the more you connect to ancestors, meaning parents, grandparents, the more you can have a sense of groundedness. I mean, once you make connections, it becomes like a like you're being on like being on the internet, and you start reading something, you start learning something, and then there are hyperlinks, and the hyperlinks, you know, keep bringing you more and more information, and the more information we have, the better we do across the life or across the life as the life sequence, including relationships, including having intimate relationships, having empathy, sympathy, being curious about others. So that's what's important about having the narrative. It makes us feel grounded and rooted. It's kind of like if you think of your life as a puzzle that has hundreds of pieces, the more you fill the puzzle, the less mystified we are about things that don't feel right or ways in which we don't feel well. And you have a sense of well-being. When you put the last piece of the puzzle, you feel accomplished, you feel a sense of relief, and maybe a sense of completeness or wholeness that people are often missing. So having a narrative that's malleable and that can constantly be updated for context is important. And it's especially important for not passing on traumas of previous generations, because if we accept our parents' stories as is and don't annotate and modify and update it for the context of our life, we can perpetuate damage without realizing it.
Now, also along those lines, why do traumatic events repeat for generations? Again, get into that, and what's your thought on that as well?
Well, it's a great question. It's a very layered question. Traumatic events repeat for generations because people are in the dark. People don't know what's happened to them. If they're not aware of the trauma, or if they're not aware of the impact of the trauma, there are many reasons for inheritance of the effects of trauma. And epigenetics is a very sexy word these days, but it means something very specific. And, you know, things are inherited. First of all, it's most simply because of direct communication. So direct interaction with someone that's traumatized or has a trauma may just impart the traumatic experience, and the person may behave in a way that has an impact on their child or the next generation. But things get embedded. And these are cultural phenomena and individual phenomena within families. There's an embeddedness to things. If we're unaware, they carry on. I can give you a quick example out of my book, which is part of it, and it's in the article I just wrote about managing our inner saboteur. We undermine ourselves because we protect ourselves. You know, the human organism is an organism that strives for safety, for equilibrium, for balance, for homeostasis, and to become balanced with taking the least amount of energy to do it. And so we're not going to look at ourselves if it hurts. So, you know, if you have some unconscious automatic construct, and I call them AMCs, which basically are templates that are modified by our upraising, by the way we're reared, we incorporate. Our inner world is made up of different relationships, and what we get used to becomes kind of embedded, and so we approach life a certain way. So, for example, I was with my grandson one day walking into a store, and, you know, he left with a friend. He was going to take a nap. I was in the store, and basically within a few minutes, no one was there to help me. The store was abandoned, and I waited and I looked around. I thought, this is strange. I better protect this store. They left the register unmanned. There's no one here. There's a tiny boutique. Two people were there. And lo and behold, long story short, I left the store and I came back a half hour later because I saw there were people there and there were police officers in there. And I said, oh my goodness, what happened? And they asked me if I had been in the fitting room a half hour ago. And I said, yes. Ma'am, are you carrying a firearm on yourself today? One officer asked me, and I said, What? Of course not. Me, you know, a grandmotherly psychiatrist, why would I have a firearm? And they said, well, what's that in your pocket? And I reflexively went to my pocket, and they took their guns out. The female came and frisked me, and it was freaking me out. It was quite shocking. And it turns out that after long explanation, I was very shaken by it, of course, you know, to be surrounded by six police officers, you know, holding their guns, and they holstered them, of course, when they took my car keys out of my pocket, which were, you know, big, you know, one of these big keys that has a little bit of leather on it, but certainly nothing that looked like a gun. And, you know, I'm petite, and this woman that was helping me was much larger than me. She could have pummeled me in a second. And she basically thought I had a gun and called the police. And there were two police cars out there. I mean, this was a huge thing. And it turns out, I said, she either has a psychiatric illness, she's psychotic, or she's had terrible trauma, but there's something wrong with her association. And she was literally quick on the trigger to call the police, convinced I had a gun because she was privy to gun violence as a child. And she had a very immediate hair trigger reaction. And she just decided I had a gun, and she didn't think about it. So, you know, there's an example of someone that's being ruled by an automatic mental construct that the world's unsafe. And until proven otherwise, if I think this lady has a gun, I'm out of here and I'm calling the police. She couldn't stop and think, how do I feel? What am I feeling? And why might I be thinking this? And is this rational? And that's what we all need to do. So the best habit we can form is to create a part of ourself, which most children that don't have these kinds of traumas, most people that are brought up in a reasonable setting, learn to have these thoughts where they think before they react. But the best habit we can form is to develop a part of ourself that's observing, that's kind of a neutral spectator. And no matter what we're going through, stop for a second before we react and say, okay, neutral judge, neutral, what's going on here? Like the Truman Show, like watching yourself on a reality TV show. Remove a piece of yourself, perch yourself on a tree and watch what's happening, and then see if you can come up with another explanation. And that process of introspection will develop these neurons that actually select for rationality, and as I said before, these higher cognitive functions. That neuroplasticity correlates. Neuroscience shows us it correlates with reflection and with mindful meditation.
Really do appreciate the visit, and that was one story right there. I tell you what, I really appreciate your sharing that, and there's a lot to learn from that story and event in your life. Lastly, how do we become kinder people? That's a great place and a great question to conclude here today.
Well, to become a kinder human, you have to have, there's a number of qualities that make people kind, to my way of thinking. And this is also attachment theory based. And the things we want to learn is we have to have compassion. We have to have conscious curiosity. You have to be outward oriented. You have to think about others, yourself, of course, but you have to think about others and generally have interest. You have to learn to have empathy and sympathy. And we have to be self-reflective. We have to know ourselves before we can know another person. Otherwise, we make assumptions and we guess about all kinds of things that we don't have a right to really know about. And then lastly, we have to understand a person's temperament. So when you're relating to someone else, you have to understand their temperament. You have to be tactful when you're talking with people. You have to understand timing. You have to understand who you're dealing with. So to become kinder, we have to have, I mean, empathy is the key, but empathy doesn't just develop. I mean, it does develop automatically, as I said, in a reasonable enough childhood. It doesn't demand that much to have a good enough parent. Basically, you know, you need to grow up in a sense, be around someone that's consistent enough, reliable, and loving. And even with trauma, like in my family, there's emotional trauma because my parents were persecuted. They were victims of persecution and war in the Holocaust. They were loving people and they were kind people. So that is the most important thing. How do we become? I mean, hopefully we're raised that way and the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But if not, we need to focus inward because we spent way too much time finger pointing at others. And if we just point inwards instead a little bit, we will become kinder people. The other thing that we need to do is do things for other people in the world. You know, Viktor Frankl was a famous, wrote a very famous book. And he basically said, you know, like my mother, I used to say, don't capitulate to despair. Be other oriented, do something for someone else, get outside of your head and you'll feel better joining the world and doing some good for someone else. So that's another way to become a kinder person. But loving kindness has to start within. And if you hate yourself, and we all have inner saboteurs, we all have critical, we all have a mental committee made up of lots of different people that inhabit our minds. And some of us have a very critical judge that talks at us all day and criticizes. And some of us have more loving kindness. And that has a lot to do with our background and where we come from and the relationships we internalize. We've got to work on self-love and self-acceptance and easing that voice in our own head before we can treat other people well. And the better you know yourself, the more you can forecast your future, you can travel the road you want to travel on, and the less clutter you have to project onto others. And the more self-definition you have, the more autonomy, the more agency, and that makes for a person who can stand up against things and not be a bystander or complicit. And that turns into a whole social discussion about social pressures and social group psychology, which is another story. But you know, the people who are self-defined and who know themselves well are less likely to be swept up by cults and mass psychology, because that's a whole nother, you know, mass psychology is kind of, group psychology loses their rationality. It's emotionally driven, whereas individual psychology is much more centered and oriented toward individual mindfulness and individual agency.
Dr. Haler, appreciate the visit and appreciate your joining us here today on the program. If listeners wanted to get more information on yourself or to pick up the book Yesterday, Never Sleeps, where is the best place online to do so?
They can get the book anywhere that books are sold. Amazon and my Amazon book page is a good start. My website, JackieHeller.com or JacquelineHeller.com, has everything about me, including other writings, my social media links, and it's a compact place where you can find everything. It's JACQUELINE or JACKIE.
And of course, listeners, you can find these links and other links that pertain to this interview on the broadcast page for your convenience. Dr. Haler, all the best. And again, we thank you for joining us here today on Health Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're certainly more than welcome anytime. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Jackie Haler, an MD, a psychoanalyst and board certified in psychiatry and neurology. Her professional experience as a practicing clinician has allowed her extensive insight into the vast range of human experiences. Again, her new book is Yesterday Never Sleeps, which delves into her personal experience with family trauma and helping others work through their own. And for all the details, simply visit JackieHeller.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the Health Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more Health Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at healthradionetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit ehealthradionetwork.com.